Hi, welcome back. I am Jeff Medford.
And I'm Alistair Spears.
Thank you for joining again with Office 365 Fundamentals. We are going to get started on the next module, which is deploying Office 365 into production. So we're going to walk through some of the techniques you use through the fast track methodology, step two, which moves you from on-premises to online in a step-by-step way. Yeah. So we will get through that, and I'm on the fundamentals agenda there, and here's what we're actually going to talk about within this module.
Yeah.
We're going to verify your domain, identity management, go through a ton of that, and then understanding coexistence down all the way to some migration options.
Fantastic.
So
perhaps we should review what we've covered so far in this course.
Yeah, we have reviewed basically going through these three steps. Pilot, deploy, enhance, and before that, talked about IT pros
yeah.
and kind of the new IT pro model from Office 365 perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so for the remainder of this, we'll talk more about the deployment, more about these actionable steps that you should do, then we'll finish up with service management and change management as we get to the end. Let's dive into deployment.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to highlight the blue box in the middle there, the deploy, step two. As part of Fast Track, and we talked about it in the previous modules, it really is about starting fresh, easy, coming on board from a perspective of the service is running, it's a cloud service, so why don't we start consuming it as that, all the way to deployment, which is making sure that your on-premises architecture, talking to the cloud, Active Directory, and then all the way through some mail scenarios. So we're going to dive in on this second step here. And what it looks like in detail is really where are you coming from? What are you doing from an Active Directory perspective? Let's use some tools and some capabilities and some step-by-step guidance to get you core onboarding. And that's really where deployment, you know, instead of taking months or huge amounts of time, pilot, it's just hours. You're starting to get on board the service. Then you're using it and driving that business value.
Mm.
Deploy, it's that days to weeks. Like, how quickly can you, as the IT pro, as someone working with the IT team, how quickly can you engage your other teams to work on some identity, work on some core onboarding scenarios?
Yeah. So it's not the actual work that takes months and months as we get to this step. This is still like kind of a few days to weeks in terms of project. And sometimes the hardest thing is just the lead time that you have on finding out who owns the domains and those sorts of things, rather than the actual physical like IT work of doing this deployment stuff.
Correct. And so when we think of what's required, like, you know, I was just showing the steps, what's required is you got to know about your AD. You got to know about, are you hosting your own DNS? Do you need to make changes there to do what we call domain verification? And then what is required from a mail perspective? So it is digging a little bit more into the planning, but we still see these as core steps for core onboarding, which should help you move quickly from a cloud perspective.
Great.
So step one, you know, verifying your domain. When you move into the deployment, as Alistair was just talking about, the hardest part isn't verifying your domain. The hardest part might be knowing who owns it
yeah.
or where it sits or
That's
what
right.
are the login credentials to the DNS side of things.
Yeah.
Because really from an Office 365 side, it's really simple. All we are trying to look for in a verified domain is that you started with .onmicrosoft.com, you started with those creds, move through. Of course you want to use your domain.
Mm.
You probably already have a domain, probably have dozens or hundreds
yeah.
of domains, and we can support all of that. So as you think about domain verification, all we're doing is making sure you are the owner of that domain, so then it becomes your login and your credentials as
yeah.
you move forward. And it starts by simply logging into the portal. You then go into the admin experience, which shows service health dashboard, a lot of stuff we'll talk about in the change management
mm-hmm.
and in the service operations side, but also setup, users and groups and domains. You select your domain and you'll see that very first frontline domain, the onmicrosoft.com. And as you work through, you select to add And it's just step by step. I mean, it's wizard driven type of things.
Yeah.
You haven't even gotten to what you actually need to do from a work perspective, because we're just letting you know, look, this is to verify, this is to move through very quickly and easily.
Yeah.
The type of a domain, and we've built out help and documentation based on your provider. So you see there as you do the drop down. We also have some integration points with GoDaddy, which come up here. So if you are a GoDaddy user, or you know, you use them for your services, we'll actually know that when you put in your domain and ask you to either verify it through an automated process, or we'll step right directly through. Mm-hmm. So you're adding a verification. This isn't changing mail flow in any way.
Yeah.
This is literally just letting us know you own it. It's verified. Sometimes it takes a few minutes, an hour or so, but it really happens pretty quickly. And once you've done that, you're configured for that domain. And so you can add users, even if you were just doing bulk added users, you can just make this your default domain. On the other side, this opens up, and this is the first step to really using Active Directory Sync.
So what about for our users that we created during the pilot? Some of those users we created, and we gave them a name like contoso.onmicrosoft.com. Now that we've verified that domain, how do we get those users into a more simpler and shorter user account for them to log into?
You can manage it directly through, give them this domain that they now have, and then DirSync will actually soft match that. So if you're synchronizing from your Active Directory, DirSync sees that those users are there and simply soft match them, and then they become under the control of your Active Directory.
So we don't have to recreate anything for our pilot users. They just seamlessly transition from pilot to production once we verify the domain and change that user.
No data loss, no change from an experience. They now can simply use their own credentials as they go forward instead of that .onmicrosoft.com domain.
Perfect.
So, you know, the assumption is the business rules were set, purchase made, you're moving through. This is where the steps really occur. That, you know, after you're decided to onboard to the service, verifying the domain is step one, getting it out of the way, and then everything really flows from there. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about domains and verifying and domain management, it gets into that identity discussion. Mm-hmm. And identity really is critical. It doesn't matter if you're doing Yammer, it doesn't matter if you're doing Office 365 Pro Plus, it really, or Link or any of the other services, you have to visualize and implement identity.
Yeah.
Whether it's those cloud IDs we talked about that are really straightforward, or Active Directory integration. So we're going to step just through the identity management side.
Sure.
Some of the things that to think about, see some of the scenarios, and then like we've talked about this whole time, step into what you absolutely need, because we make it that easy from a step-by-step process.
And so really behind the scenes, the identity management platform of Office 365 is Windows Azure Active Directory. That's a service inside of Windows Azure that really acts as that one cloud directory for all of your business applications, whether that's Office 365, whether that's CRM Online, or Windows Azure. Having this one Azure Active Directory that's shared amongst not only all the Office 365 components, but all the components across Microsoft's business products is really important. So a couple of things to note, though, when we start talking about Windows Azure Active Directory, oftentimes I get questions like, hey, does this replace my Active Directory? Do I no longer need my domain controllers or anything like that? Absolutely not. So this is best to think about this as this is a cloud service for you to actually replicate parts of your Active Directory into, just to help log in and secure those online services. It doesn't replace Active Directory. It's not your Active Directory services running on top of Windows Azure infrastructure as a service, so there aren't machines for you to log into or anything like that. It's really just a programmatic endpoint for all of our applications and a way for you to control access to multiple cloud services or even on-premises services that connect up to the Windows Azure AD APIs to integrate with those applications as well. So let's take a quick look at how Office 365 kind of handles authorization and authentication through Office 365. So say I'm Bob. Bob's trying to connect to Office 365. And what will happen? Office 365 will actually check Bob's credentials against Windows Azure. So Windows Azure is the thing that's authenticating Bob to be who he says he is. And once we know Bob is who he says he is, then all the Office 365 services can authorize him to use certain things. So while Windows Azure has that authentication model that proves who Bob is, it's still Office 365 that tells us who Bob's what Bob's allowed to access itself. And so the easiest way to get all those cloud identities created into Windows Azure is pretty simple. It's really just a bulk upload of a spreadsheet, a CSV file. So very simply, we can fill out a CSV file of all the users that we want to do in our pilot, upload that spreadsheet into Windows Azure Active Directory, and we'll do this through the Office 365 admin experience, so it's not like we have to log into a different place. It's all just behind the scenes. Azure AD is creating all of this for us. And then that's essentially how we manage a cloud identity.
And that's really how a pilot gets started.
Exactly,
You can start through and do that really quick CSV upload, bulk import, and your users are ready to go.
That's right. So as we move beyond that, we get into this next model of directory and password hash synchronization. I like to call that the password hash really specifically here, because when we say password sync, it's not like we're copying your passwords up off-premises into a Windows Azure Active Directory or anything like that. All we're doing is we're essentially hashing that password. A hash is kind of a one-way encryption, and then we're hashing the input that the user puts in. We're actually hashing them twice, both sides, and then we're comparing those double hashes together, and if they match, that's how we authenticate the user. So no passwords are ever passed across your network or leave your premises in this particular case as well. So when we think about that, we take one extra step, and this is where DirSync comes into play. DirSync is our directory synchronization tool. It's like a little service that runs on a server, on the DC, or wherever you want to run it. And all it does is it synchronizes the Active Directory objects that you tell it to up into Windows Azure Active Directory. So it's creating all of those user accounts in Windows Azure Active Directory. It's a one-way push. It goes up there, creates them all there. And then similar to the cloud identity model, when Bob tries to connect to Office 365, Bob's authenticating against Windows Azure Active Directory. And DirSync's there running in the background. Every 3 hours, typically, it will synchronize up any changes or any adds to those users as well.
And from a password perspective, it's as soon as Bob changes his password.
That's right. So when Bob changes his password on premises, it forces a quick sync to change that up into Windows Azure AD. Yep. So it's a very seamless, I like to think of it as a same sign-on, not quite a single sign-on, but a same sign-on experience into Office 365.
Yep.
So then the next step is really identity federation. This is more the enhanced phase. This is what we'd get to in step three if we want some of those extra capabilities. And here what we're actually doing is we're changing the authentication model. We're changing that authoritative truth from Windows Azure to the on-premises Active Directory environment. And so instead what happens here when Bob tries to connect, Bob will connect to Office 365. Office 365 will ask Windows Azure, and Windows Azure has set up a one-way trust with your Active Directory Federation services on-premises and says, actually, no, I'm not authorized to authenticate Bob. You need to go and talk to this server on-premises. And so in that respect, Bob is checking with Office 365. Office 365 is checking with Windows Azure. Windows Azure is passing it on to your ADFS server, and ADFS is actually authenticating Bob to make sure he is who he says he is. And because that's happening on-premises, you can inject all sorts of hoops and jumps that Bob has to jump through before he's allowed to get that authentication token, before Office 365 will trust that Bob is who he says he is.
And that's where we think of like client access control.
Yeah.
That's where we think of IP filtering or the capabilities of being able to force him to be in a VPN even to access a cloud service, which for a lot, the vast majority of our customers simply isn't a hoop they put people through. But what it enables us to say is, you have some needs as a business, you have technical or security infrastructure, we have the way to handle it, whether it's
Absolutely.
From Cloud ID all the way through to Active Directory Federation services, which then enables some of those other scenarios.
Yeah.
So when we think of the deploy identity scenario, we still are in this step two. We're in the directory synchronization, password synchronization, moving from your Active Directory through. So step three is still grayed out, and we're going to work through some of the scenarios and show in a demonstration what it actually looks like to help remediate and also work with the directory synchronization.
Sure. And AD remediation is a big topic. You could spend a lot of time on here. We've been running Active Directory on-premises in various shapes and forms for quite some time. We've probably gone through multiple upgrades. We've had all sorts of good IT guys, bad IT guys working for all of our companies in the past. And so who knows what is in this Active Directory system?
And one of the main features of Windows Azure AD is that it is actually pretty restrictive. And so a lot of our customers see that they might have information or .local or things happening within their Active Directory that needs to be remediated. Mm. And in the past, before these tools and before the kind of focus on Fast Track and Step 2, our customers had to dig around and try to find what actually was in play and what wasn't. And there were long service descriptions about what Windows Azure allowed, what are the fields we're checking. So one of the tools from an engineering investment perspective that we built is that from a Azure AD, we know where the confines are. We know how those actually are going to react on your on-premises AD. Mm-hmm. So when you think of the error remediation tool, you have all these names, Joe Smoth, Tim Clark. They might have dozens of things wrong with them. Yeah. So we find that. Well, putting ID fix, which is a very simple tool downloaded from TechNet. As we put ID fix in between there and run remediation from ID fix, ID fix will allow you to run against your current environment, check to see what is the issue, and actually remediate directly. And we have seen literally our customers go from weeks of remediation and research and trying to find what's going on, looking through their event viewer, what DirSync's failing on.
Yeah.
We've seen it go from weeks to either hours or even a couple of days when it's in a large environment.
Right.
And what happens is you're able to then move through something that used to take quite some time, see what's going to happen, and continue forward. And so I wanted to show a demonstration of what ID fix looks like, some of the errors that it finds, and then what directory synchronization actually looks like. Because we talk about these features, they seem kind of technical, but it ends up being kind of a click, click, click next situation. And when we talk about it's a wizard. And when we talk about what it actually is to do DirSync, and then especially with password sync, to be able to see what it actually looks like, it's a big help for our customers.
And one thing also to note when we're talking about identity management, DirSync, and these sorts of things, you can still filter it down to organizational units, so you don't need to remediate or synchronize your entire directory up into Windows Azure Active Directory. You can just filter it down, say, actually only these users, these are the ones I want to DirSync, and start there and maybe gradually grow or maybe not and just keep syncing those same users up.
Yep, we'll talk a little bit about that as we go through some of the deeper details. So on my screen now, I'm logged into Office 365 in the admin portal. And what you see is I'm in the users and groups and I have Active Directory synchronization turned on. The way I know it's turned on is because the only thing I can do is deactivate it. So if I didn't have it turned on, it would simply say activate. I have several users that are actually built in the cloud, and these might be some of my pilot users. They might not. They're just users that I built. And so now that I have AD synchronization on, the service is now listening for that synchronization, I can actually go to my DirSync appliance or server or on my DC now, and I can see that I have IDFix loaded. And I can bring up IDFix. It's telling me, please, we want you to read this, make sure you understand. This is for the IT administrators. It's something that can do work and change your environment. So I have a very kind of simple ID fix version here, and I'm going to query into my AD. What it came back with was all the names that I know are going to fail if I try to do DirSync. And so this is where I used to have to search through this. Maybe the value has some question marks. Maybe it's .local. Maybe it has characters or is blank. All of these would have failed within DirSync, and I would have had to look in the event viewer, had to go through each one of these line by line. But instead, I can see what they are going to actually change it to, and I can edit. I could make the changes myself. I could say, just remove that one. Maybe it's someone from 10 years ago in my environment I don't need anymore, or complete that action. And I can actually make these edits and changes directly from here. And I could choose to change that to the true.com.
Yeah.
And when I accept these changes and apply, it actually is going to make those changes into my Active Directory.
And what whoa.
Yeah.
Changes to Active Directory?
Oh, no. So what it also did, and you saw this land on the desktop here where I'm running from the ID fix from, it made a backup. In a reverse. So if I made some changes that all of a sudden I get a call from someone who can't log in or someone who had an apostrophe or a hyphen in the wrong place, I can immediately go back to the changes that I wanted to and apply those. So big undo button, which is always good when you're working with software. And I can make sure and go back to where I was. We automatically do that every single time.
Fantastic.
So I've made these changes to my Active Directory. I'm now remediated. And so what I'm able to do is go to Directory Sync Configuration, which again is a download from Microsoft Downloads. It's going to take a minute to pull up here. And it's a sync tool wizard. This really is set it, forget it, keep moving forward. It's an appliance, and it's going to run as a service. What it's going to ask me are, what are my credentials for logging in? And I know my creds are Contoso 107 Cloud.
Tell everyone your password as well, Jeff.
Yeah, of course.
So this is public way. This is one thing that catches me out as well. It's going to actually ask you a couple of times for some different logins. So this one is your online account, so either your Office 365 admin account, or if you're using an Azure AD account that you already have, it's asking for your AD then. And then as you click next,
it takes a minute. Yep. It's actually authenticating with the cloud. And then everything we do is SSL. Yep. So all the interaction is always encrypted all the way across. And now it's asking me for those credentials that I have on premises. And so I need to have Active Directory credentials. I need to be able to communicate with it. This setting, and we can talk about it in further discussions, but if I'm running and I am here because I have an Exchange 2013 server, it saw that and enabled me that if I want to allow hybrid deployment, it actually allows me to do that here. And that is allows for some write back coming from Office 365.
Sure.
So instead of kind of that one-way default access that comes through, it, in a hybrid environment, we need to be able to write back to AD. I'm not actually going to do that now. And here's the magic part. Synchronizing your passwords from your AD, enable password sync. That's it.
I'm either enabling
it or I'm not enabling it. We give you some really great information from a TechNet perspective to be able to go and understand. You know, we already talked about it, and we're actually going to go a little deeper into it as far as hashes, what we do. But when you enable password sync, this is setting in motion that all your users can use that as you set it, the same sign-in, whether they're on-premises or online.
And that's that one checkbox, I think, removed the need for about 90% of all the ADFS work that we used to have to do in the old days before we had this great dir/sync and password hash sync functionality just built into the synchronization tool.
Absolutely. The adoption we've seen from a password sync perspective has been tremendous. And it really shows that in the fast track model, we were able to say, here is where our customers might take some time, might see some roadblocks. IT might have to do budget for internal servers or geolocation. And our engineering team was able to come right into our current dir/sync products, put in the password sync, and allow us to, in the fast track mode, say, hey, this is helping our customers move to the cloud much more easier, much more quickly. Yeah. And it always can go further. Yeah. You can always do ADFS from here if you need to. So that first synchronization is now going to start. It's going to start flowing. There are some very specific documentation and pieces that state, you know, if you have 50,000 entries or objects, it'll take so long to flow up. Yeah. So we're going to let that flow, and I'll show you what that looks like in a couple of minutes. Yeah. But getting back to the demonstrate, or getting back to understanding synchronization, I wanted to now kind of get in a little bit into the weeds of what dir/sync is.
Sure.
You saw how easy it was, but it, behind the scenes, what's actually happening. And you've hit on a couple of these main points already. Mm. But it's designed as a software-based appliance, set it and forget it. It's bundled with SQL Server 2008 R2 Express Edition. if you have over a certain amount of objects or you're running into hundreds of thousands, and we have very specific documentation for this, you may need a bit larger versions of SQL, but it comes with that bundled version of SQL Server 2008, and it's the application that synchronizes your AD. It enables the run state administration so that instead of creating users in the cloud, you simply utilize your own Active Directory. It provides not only that, but it provides a global address list experience so that your DLs, your groups, the things that people are used to seeing within a global address list are immediately available. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit more about staged migration in just a couple minutes. But as you're doing staged migration, a key feature is to be able to see that global address list, see those other people, and interact with them just like they were with you on premises when it comes to that Active Directory scenario. So it enables that. It works both simple and hybrid, and it's the stepping stone for going into what's next, which is really the run state of users and contacts, the enabler of single sign-on. If you're going to do ADFS, this is a prerequisite of that. So it's all of these steps in the process that make it easier to get on board. It's not intended as a single bulk upload tool. Some of our customers ask that. They don't want to do Active Directory synchronization, but they just want that one-time kickup. That's when you use the CSV file. And we handle that in batches. We handle that in a much different way.
And there's plenty of ways to export your AD into a spreadsheet and put it up that way, PowerShell or something like that.
DirSync is powerful. It's not a one-time thing. We have other ways to do that. And what I wanted to talk about is that, you know, Visible Gal, regular NT users are synchronized as regular NT users, not automatically provisioned. DirSync doesn't license everybody. I mean, we want to allow you to DirSync everybody, get that core onboarding going, and then, as you said, start to license and move, you know, subsets of users across. When they're ready. So DirSync basically provisions and gets those users in the cloud, in Azure AD, and then it's really your choice how you start to scope. And that's one of the pieces of synchronization, is that you can scope down. You can scope down to the OU level, and you can do this with only a specific set. We see that in some mergers and acquisitions. We see that in some scenarios where you want to only synchronize a group of users to the cloud. And that's obviously part of what we can do. Mail-enabled groups are synchronized as mail-enabled. Dynamic distribution groups are not synchronized, so there are some give or take when you're dealing with this. But some of the contact objects, mail-enabled contacts are synchronized, and the target address is synchronized to Office 365. Once implemented, AD on source is the source for your users and for your synchronized objects. And then from a scope and filtering, a nice little graphic that shows, hey, take your guys with the tie but not the work tools, and only put them up. So your options are domain-based, user attribute, and OU, and you can really set aside what users you want to synchronize.
Yeah.
To go a little bit deeper into password synchronization, as you talked about, it's a feature of Windows Azure Active Directory, and it's the alternative to federated authentication. Single set of credentials, same username and password, both when you're utilizing it through on-premises and online. It's the single set of passwords that you can really help the user experience with. You know, without sending them through a proxy or through VPN to connect to the cloud, it just gives them that much better experience.
Yeah.
Fully, as I showed, fully integrated with the DirSync, I mean, in a way that it's just a checkbox.
It's the one tool, right?
It's the one tool. And there's no requirement on ADFS. Keeps it very simple. Keeps it so that it eliminates quite a bit of hardware and infrastructure cost. If that's something that, in your move to the cloud, you're not wanting to build out more hardware, as you stated, this is where this really comes into play.
That's an important point, because the DirSync tool doesn't have to be highly available. The DirSync tool can run, it can fail, the server can blow up or melt down or something like that. And all that's happening until you set that DirSync appliance back up is that just nothing else will get synchronized across.
Correct.
And so it's not highly available. But as soon as you go to ADFS, as soon as you move that point of authentication to be that on-premises ADFS server, all of a sudden, you need to make sure that's highly available. And for a real highly available identity solution, you need two different geographic locations at least. You need four servers at each location. So instantly you're talking about eight different servers across two different physical locations. So that's often a really big requirement that people don't want to meet, as they're just for passwords and just for a single sign-on experience. When same sign-on kind of does the exact same thing, and from the user's perspective, it's the exact same prompts that they see.
Absolutely. And you know, some of the concerns that our customers, when they first hear about this, are, hey, is it my passwords being synced? Is it text? And it does not require password sync is one way. It does not require nor access any kind of plain text password. No requirement for AD, reversible encrypted format. AD, the user password hash, as you said, is hashed again. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about passwords being sent to the cloud. We do not hold your passwords from an Office 365 Azure AD standpoint. And the digest in Azure AD cannot be used to access resources which are then on-premises.
Yeah. So even if we did have that hash, there's no way to enter that hash into an on-premises PC and log in or anything like that, because it's not the password.
Yep.
And it's an entirely one-way process.
Yep. And just to understand a couple of the finer points from a password synchronization, it's one way from on-prem to the cloud. We're not syncing it back down from the cloud to prem. The complexity is implemented on your AD, that's the master policy. So everything in the cloud is set to not expire, and then you own that password policy and you own the way that sets. And then the Azure AD is really driven from on-premises. So it focuses in on you continuing to drive your business from your Active Directory, and Office 365 becoming the extension of that from an experience perspective.
And all this is done just by clicking that one little checkbox in the DirSync wizard.
So, absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of crazy, but yes. So we talked about the beginnings of step two, verifying domains, moving through scenarios. Really, identity becomes core of that discussion. But from most of our customers, they simply move through very quickly and easily. The next piece that becomes a bigger topic is, what is coexistence? Mm. What does it mean to have coexistence between an Exchange server on-premises and online? And there's various forms of coexistence, hybrid technologies, depending on where you're coming from and what your investments have been. But coexistence really simply means some users are online, some users are on-premises. They are coexisting from a mail perspective, where mail flow and routing is coming through from on-premises to online and vice versa. Mm. And it means that the same objects, the same global address list is being presented, and email messages are routed seamlessly. So coexistence means seamless email, global address list, and really having a great experience when it comes to mail flow.
They both see everyone in the gal. They both have contoso.com, even though some of them are on Exchange on-prem, some of them are on Office 365.
Yep.
And they can mail each other, and the mail just flows nice and naturally.
Absolutely. The piece that we talk to customers quite a bit about is obviously free busy. So you have to understand that as you do a staged migration, it is you're moving to the cloud. And the longer you're in coexistence in a simple form, the more kind of off on an island the other people are going to be. So moving business units, moving groups all at the same time means they'll, in production, start to all function together in the same feel.
Sure.
Yeah. So it is.
So they look and feel like the same organization, except for calendar sharing.
Correct.
When you're sending in an appointment, you won't see the free busy tracker information. It'll look like an external person for that one scenario. But everything else, they look and feel like the same org.
Yep. They simply email the person right out of their gal, and that person receives the email. Yeah. It's pretty simple.
And if your users are anything like Microsoft users, no one pays attention to your free busy status anyway.
That's right. They just send meetings you the emails. No matter what. Yeah. Doesn't matter. I have to remind people that we have those features in 2013. So stage migration, what does it actually look like from an architecture? You have DirSync, which is part of stage migration. You have your Exchange 2003 or 7, and users and groups and contacts come via DirSync, and then mailbox data via Outlook Anywhere, which is how Office 365 is connecting back, starts to draw that information forward. When you think about it from a core mail flow, what's the routing look like? What is the experience? TuneIn's user, they type in a name and they hit send, and then person then replies. To IT pros, understanding the mail routing is kind of core to what we do. Yeah. And so even though it's Office 365 and servers in the cloud, we want to understand where does that mail traffic flow to? How is it actually going through? So in a staged Exchange migration, your MX record is still on your Exchange, pointing to your Exchange server, yeah. whatever you're doing. You've not changed that yet. So even in the whole grand scheme of things, you haven't really changed a bunch of your architecture. Mm. You haven't changed mail flow. Mm-hmm. And it starts to flow through. So someone outside your organization sends the email. It hits contoso.com. It then flows down and looks for that user object and says, oh, Exchange server finds John Doe. John Doe is right here. Mail goes to John Doe. Perfect. So before coexistence, we all know that's how mail goes. It finds the person. As we're on-premises to Office 365, MX record still hits back, but there's also an MX record at that core underlying .onmicrosoft.com so that as an email message flows from someone outside your company, it goes through to your Exchange server. Going through the Exchange server. Exchange then finds that user object, sees John Doe. Oh, by the way, there's a target address. That target address is what directory synchronization created to then push that mail through to the baseline.onmicrosoft.com, but then to that user, john.doe@contoso.com.
Yeah.
So it lands in Exchange Online. End user has no wherewithal of how that got there. They simply are using email.
And this is part of what's set up when you populate the GAL, right? It's setting up those target addresses and the proxy addresses in the GAL so that it knows who to talk to, which mailbox server the mail needs to go to.
Absolutely. And so when you are going from on-premises as an internal user, same thing. It's hitting the Exchange server. It's then looking at the user object. It's finding John Doe, finding the SMTP address for target address, and sending it up there. So from anywhere, it's just simply going through the same connections instead of that MX record. It then finds him, lands in his email inbox. He then has to triage his email and set up meetings and talk to a bunch of people.
Yeah.
So,
thank you, Exchange.
Yeah, thank you, Exchange, for creating work for me. So from Office 365 to on-premises, you have the same type of workflow, except instead of sending it down that target address to the long domain name that's underlying, it actually sends it out the other way through the MX record. So I am Jane Doe. I have a person who's with me in the office who's looking for me, Office 365, to Jane Doe. Guess what? Jane Doe actually has a target address that DirSync has put in and sends it out through the MX record back to contoso.com to the user object of Jane Doe, who is now still on premises.
Right.
So a lot of great PowerPoint demo going on here with our transitions and our animations, but I think it helps show like where mail actually comes from, how it actually moves through, because it does have some, you know, from an IT pro side, I want to know where that mail routing through.
And there's implications once we start to change that, where mail will flow, how it flows, and depending on where we are in that migration, it's important to understand that.
Absolutely. So as you're moving from that stage migration, as you're in that simple kind of coexistence, being able to then flow all your users up, the less users on premises, the more you have just simply interacting within Office 365. Yeah. And when we talk about migration and migration options, you know, we've gone through IDs, password sync, mail flow, coexistence, and then migration options. And this really is from wherever you're coming from, there's an opportunity from Office 365 in the admin center to do a migration. So PST, we talked a little bit about it earlier, but PST capture tools, being able to put PSTs in and then work them through a migration, simply getting them into Outlook and letting Office 365 now handle that capability, it's a big thing.
Yeah, and I always think of PST capturing as kind of cleaning up our dirty work that we did when we were on premises, we had our own Exchange server. We just didn't have the space to give people massive mailboxes. So instead, they created PSTs to archive all of their important mail off of themselves. Now we have these 50 gig mailboxes, these unlimited archives. It's important to kind of get that off the laptop and back into some centrally managed store. And that's what PST Capture allows us to do.
Absolutely. And we talk about that from an archiving or e-discovery. How do you discover something that's in a PST somewhere? And it's that needle in a haystack. And from an Exchange Online perspective, we scale so large, 50 gig mailboxes, you can find the needle in that haystack. Yeah. But you have to have the haystack that's to find it from. And PSTs is not a great spot to be in from that capability. So PSTs coming in from offline mail, IMAP migration, and when you think of IMAP migration, that can come from all kinds of different services. Mm-hmm. It can come from older technologies. It really is an open platform from there. And the tools are built into the admin center. Mm-hmm. So as you go to do a stage migration or as you go to do an IMAP migration, you're then just pulling in, giving it your creds, a CSV file, and then plowing through those mailboxes.
And it's Office 365 connecting in and pulling out that mail. There's nothing you have to set up on premises. You don't have to run an own migration server or anything like that to do that.
Yep. And then we get to stage migration, and you see there it's supported for 2003 and 2007. And that stage migration doesn't require on-premises architecture, and identity federation with on-premises directory is what it really requires. It requires that AD to be able to populate the GAL so that we can have the users to move them on board. And then hybrid deployment, and you see the check boxes with 2010 and 2013. You know, we talked about it, like, modules ago, but Microsoft shifted to a very cloud-aware development process. Mm. And when you think of 2003 and 2007 Exchange servers, that was before any of this. That was before a lot of cloud services and scale model from a cloud. As we developed and moved into Exchange 2010, you can see that it became way more cloud aware. So if you have invested in Exchange 2010, especially SP3, where it's literally wizard driven, you have the ability to do true hybrid from Exchange 2010, and it is it gives you that free busy. It gives you that more seamless integration rather than the simple coexistence. So all models from more than 10 years ago to even IMAP, which could be forever ago, all the way through to the latest and greatest where it's simply wizard driven and working through. To go through some of the actual deep of in some of those scenarios, large mail or large number of source systems, works on premises or hosted, IMAP can do batches, and there is no tools required. This is straight out of the box Office 365.
So it's the hodgepodge of different environments, right? You may have some people on Lotus, some people on GroupWise, some people on Gmail. I think, you know, hospitals are a great example of this, where every different ward had its own weird and wonderful system and those sorts of things. And now you can kind of pull it all together into Office 365.
Absolutely. And when you think about what's required, it's some ports being open, it's your domains in Office 365, it's user mailboxes prior to migration, because you gotta have a mailbox to feed into that. But it's very simple. It works from a CSV perspective. And you can see there, it's max of 50,000 rows, 10 meg inside when for the CSV file. But then you can just batch those CSVs. So if you have thousands of users coming, you can do that from a CSV. The limited data migration scope, and we'll dig into that a little bit here. Mail messages, there's a maximum, and it's possible to exclude some folders from migration. To be quite honest, not migrated are things like contacts, calendars, tasks, excluded folders, messages that are larger than 25 meg. So as you have IMAP systems, you might be pulling just that core data, or you might be leaving that and saying, look, we can start fresh online, we can move forward very quickly, and we don't have to do a huge data migration scope. We can then just lock that away on premises somewhere and say, our data policy now is everything new is in the cloud, old stuff we'll keep for X amount of years for whatever reason. So you know, we're talking about data migration capabilities. The option's always there to say, old is old, we're gonna lock it away, new policy is, start your mailbox, start online, and start going. From a stage migration, from an Exchange perspective, really it's simple and flexible, high fidelity, all mailbox content is migrated, typically best suited from a medium to large, but I mean, it goes down to, if you have an Exchange server and can run DirSync, why not do this? Yeah. It's a pretty simple thing. Users can be migrated in batches up to 1,000 per batch. And it works with Exchange 2003 and 2007. So when you think of coming from the older technology that wasn't so cloud aware, it's the ability to use Office 365 as your migration engine and have that pull this data in.
And this is the case where you do require directory sync to do this.
Yep.
You do require ticking the box in directory sync as well to enable a hybrid deployment.
No, that's not for the hybrid, the actually. Step. Yeah, yep. So you don't even need to select that. Because
and you don't need federation
hybrid.
Either, do you? You can just use directory synchronization at this stage.
Correct. Great. So this is so baseline that we see so many of our customers that just work through this, and it's that one shot.
Yeah.
You're not going into simple coexistence for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
It's we have made the decision. We're moving forward, and we're going to make Office 365 the new home for our mailbox.
Job's not done until you turn those servers off, right?
Correct. That's right. And from a user experience, the admin basically does dir sync, or if you're not doing dir sync with password sync, you distribute the new passwords. Users create their new Outlook profiles. And from a very tactical data network, you're moving mail from your server to online, and then your end users are downloading OSTs. Mm-hmm. So it's a fresh OST. Think about some of the ramifications with the NK2 files. But that is the way that we call a true migration. Mm-hmm. Simple coexistence, get to the cloud, and then everything comes down fresh from an end user perspective. The scope. Partial migrations are not possible. You're basically saying this mailbox and everything in it is rolling through.
Yeah.
New cloud mailbox is created and the existing cache mode files cannot be preserved. Mm-hmm. So from an experience, it is that kind of shut. Get it up.
Yeah.
Get it going. Utilize your bandwidth and talk to your bandwidth provider if you want to make this real quick. And that becomes your migration strategy.
It becomes a physics problem, really, about how fast can I move my data from on-prem into Office 365 at that stage. And generally, the bandwidth challenges aren't at our end. They're generally the pipe coming out of that building, which is why oftentimes we stage that migration over weekends or something like that when the office isn't full.
Absolutely. Like and then when you think of the data migration scope, it is mail, messages, folders, rules, and categories. You think of this as a very rich experience from the end user perspective. Mm-hmm. They will have to re-download that OST. I have so many devices, I don't know what to do, so I think I'm constantly downloading OSTs. But I know that in some scenarios with IT, that's a big thing to go through.
And one of the things you can do with Outlook 2013 now is actually control how big that OST becomes. So you can scope that down to say, hey, actually, by group policy, only allow Outlook to pull down the last 3 months of data into the OST and those sorts of things. So you can start to control how much data is pulled back into the network in that way.
Yep. And I love the not migrated bullet point here, the dumpster. That's the deleted items. Yeah. So we are not going to take your deleted items, which may be 20,000 of them, and move them forward. But we're pretty straightforward as far as like, hey, this is what's going to be moved, this is how it's going to be moved. Yeah. All of this is very detailed.
And you may laugh, but you probably have one or two users that do use their deleted items folder as an archive policy. They may even have folders inside of the recycle bin sometimes, so it can be pretty scary.
Yes. So make sure you're kind of checking in on, as you're doing your stage migration, what that really looks like.
Yeah.
And the third one, and I've kind of talked about it a few times here, but it's Exchange 2010 SP3 Hybrid. Customers with Exchange 2010 SP3 or 2013 can deploy hybrid in step two. So when you think about what our step two from a fast track methodology is, easiest possible scenario, if you're enabled with these investments and Exchange in the last 3 or 4 years, you're going to have a better experience, just plain and simple. We've built the products to really interact with Office 365.
You're closer aligned to what the Office 365 service actually is at that point, right?
Correct. So. Yep. So there's a wizard. Can't make it too much easier than a wizard. And you're able to literally connect Office 365 as that other environment. And you can actually manage it from your Exchange Management Console. Yep. You can manage the mailbox moves. And once you have that architecture in place, that is where you have the free busy and the implementation of being able to move a mailbox. Mm-hmm. You don't have to download the OST. Yeah. It truly is a mailbox move mm-hmm. and not a mailbox migration using MRS.
And sometimes in our documentation, you'll see this referred to as Exchange Server Federation. But it's important to point out that this doesn't require Active Directory federation. This notion of a hybrid, you're federating, but you don't need to do that identity federation. As long as you do dir-sync, dir-sync's all you need to do that. And then you have the mail attributes, the write back enabled, and then it'll all work perfectly without ADFS.
Correct. So ADFS is not required from a hybrid scenario. I think early on in the Office 365 game, we saw a lot of people that were doing all of it at the same time.
Yeah.
But what we've seen is you can strip back the identity and really drive that hybrid deployment to make it easier and get on board very quickly. So as we move forward, to really recap, in previous modules, we talked about step one, all of the kind of what you can do in step one, what the scope of work is. We focused here in this module on getting to production, and that is step two. Started with those vanity domains or verified domains. It moved through core onboarding with identity, getting users actually provisioned and licensed, all the way through to a staged Exchange migration, or if you have the functionality of Exchange 2010 SP3 and above, being able to do that in a hybrid mode. And really, when you've seen the pilot, you've seen what we've walked through from here in what we call step two deploy. We know that our customers do these steps. These are best practices. And from an expectation setting standpoint, if you do these things in this order, you can expect to be core onboarded to Office 365. So to kind of summarize and bring it back for this module, it really is that step two gets you core onboarded, gets you moving forward. You are now utilizing the service in a very meaningful way in production.
Absolutely.
So, thank you very much for joining us for this module. Hopefully you found it very useful. And from a technical side, we've gone through a lot of those different routes. Thanks again for watching.
Thank you.